Welcome to the Share Life podcast with Jason Scott Montoya, where we explore stories and systems to live better and work smarter.
Another episode of the Share Life podcast. I'm Jason Scott Montoya, and this is a Listen to Learn episode. Today, I'm here with Isaac Ingram. Isaac, say hello.
Hello, hello.
Isaac is a philanthropist and filmmaker. And today we're going to learn about a little bit about his story, but specifically, Isaac produced and screened a 30-minute short film, which was a huge project for him to dive into and make happen. And I want to talk to him about that project and some of the lessons he learned. Before I do that, how we met, I want to just give a quick, brief update onto that. Me and Isaac met, we actually went to Victory World Church together, and we were in a small group. Many, many years ago. It was probably 14, 15 years ago, 2009 or 2010, I think. And we've been friends ever since. We've stayed in touch, and Isaac is always reaching out about this project or that project. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I've been one of his movie stars. Before I was in the movie with Tom Cruise, I was in Isaac's movie. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. But thank you so much, Isaac, for joining us.
Thank you.
And anything else you want to throw in there before we talk a little about your journey?
No, that was a great intro. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, tell us. Let's go back to how you got into volunteering, because that kind of really ties into one of your earlier projects and mentoring, and some of your philanthropic work. So tell us about that.
Great question. Well, I got married in 2005.
The same year as us. Yeah.
yep. 2000. Joined it. I joined my church. Met a woman that was also at my church. My wife, and I'd searched around doing some volunteer work with the church, but it was in February of 2007. I saw. I'm a big NFL fan, and I saw Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith. They're two black head coaches, the first two black head coaches to ever get to the Super Bowl. And before the Super Bowl, there was a little 15-second commercial. And these two men took the time. They said, hey, the best thing that you can do for the community is be a mentor. Mm. And I was going, wow, you know, like these two guys are at the top of their game. You know, for them to take 15 seconds, I mean, I really took note of it. And so at my church, there was a young guy who was doing recreation and visitation with the church at a local youth detention center.
Yeah.
So I joined up and started going with him and that team to do that, and just fell in love with it. And I mean, it was amazing.
What was it that you fell in love with?
Well, going out, you know, these kids are between 12 and 17 years old, typically. You know, they could be younger.
Yeah.
And they've been locked up for whatever reason, and it could be very serious stuff or truancy, just different things. And going in there and doing recreation, like just basketball, non-contact football, volleyball, you know, just and getting them into teams and just – getting them away from the environment of being locked up.
Yeah. Right?
And then having a heart-to-heart conversation with them and talking to them about what's going on with them, either through one-on-one visitation. I started to see that, you know, there's a lot of people who go through a lot of things that, and they can't necessarily express how they feel or process how they feel, especially at such a young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you break through that? Do you kind of share some of your own stories and ideas and then let them kind of piggyback on that? Or how do you handle that type of dynamic?
You know what? Over the years, man, what I found is that, what I found is that 85% of kids in detention centers do not have a man living in their household. Many of them suffer from abandonment issues that they don't talk about. And the biggest problem is they don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So, there was a lady by the name of Susan Anderson. She's got she's a psychotherapist who did a 30-year study on the subject of abandonment.
Yeah.
And you know, when she started, like, when I started looking at her stuff, almost like the five phases of grief.
Yeah.
She calls it swirl. The S stands for shattering. The W stands for withdrawal. The I stands for internalizing. The R stands for rage. And the L stands for lifting.
Mm-hmm.
What I realized was there was a pattern of a lot of kids that would be angry in there. And a lot of the anger, I believe, stemmed from the fact that they felt abandoned.
Yeah.
Right. And or whatever, however they were dealing with processing things. And I started to realize that one of the things that you have to do in reaching people is help them realize that no matter if they're locked up or whatever they're locked up for whatever they've done, that they are valued. They're valued by God and they're valued by you because you're taking your time to come in and talk and listen to them.
Yeah.
And when people feel validated, you can reach them where they are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it's important to note, as we continue to kind of talk about the projects that you do, particularly your short film, that swirl framework is built into the story itself.
Yes.
As a way to reach people that are in that place.
Absolutely.
So this, you're trying to tell stories that also help people grow and change in a positive way.
A positive way. Right.
Yeah,
definitely.
I guess one thing before we jump into how you got into the film world is, people may not, I think most of us probably have not done that type of volunteer work. We've gone into those types of detention centers or even prison ministries. What would you tell someone that's never done that? Like, what would you want them to understand that they don't understand because they've never done that?
That's a great question. You know what? What I came to realize is that, when I would have, I would recruit other volunteers to come in, what would happen is we'd go in and after a while they'd say, you know what? This is just a kid.
Yeah.
They're human beings. I tell the boys and the young people that I mentor in there, I say, look, listen, and I tell the volunteers, all of us are nothing away but one decision away from being locked up. The judge, the DA, the counselors, the clergy, men and women that come in.
Yeah.
Nothing but one bad decision away, right? So, when you speak to someone and you get to a human being, and the essence of their humanness, you can connect with them.
Yeah. So is the assumption there that people think there's just a bunch of monsters locked up and they don't realize that they're just the same? They're, almost like, I couldn't be that person. I wouldn't be that person.
Right.
But then you're saying, with one really bad decision, you'll be right next to them.
Exactly. And I think you don't necessarily, get that sometimes because you're like, oh, I would never do this. Mm-hmm. I would never do this wrong or that wrong. But there are, all of us do not know. We don't know. We could say that, but some things can arise where we do make a mistake. And so, you've got to, keep that into consideration and have grace. If you were born in their situation, if you had the circumstances they had, where would you be? Could you possibly be the same way in the same position?
Yeah. And why are you reaching out to kids under 18 versus like a prison industry for adults? Is there a particular reason you picked that?
Well, I think when I got in there and started seeing at such a young age that this is one of the most vulnerable times of your life, right? Part of the reason why I came up with doing the short film that I did was because, I was seeing a lot of kids, especially African-American kids, who have no idea what our ancestors went through for them to be free.
Yeah.
They're just trying to get through their day.
Yeah.
They don't have a history of the fact that people have, black men and women, with the Civil War have lost their lives so that you might have freedom one day to be able to make better choices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to make a film that could both make young boys and girls to become better men and women.
Yeah. So what would you say, you know, I'm not black, you are. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to someone like me or other people who don't have that experience, particularly as it relates to children being in these detention centers and locked up? What are some things you'd like us to know?
Well, I think what happens is we get a sense that it's, you know, it's probably black kids that's locked up. It's probably white kids. I mean, it's probably black kids and things like that. But when you get in there, you see that it's every type of kid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you're not, you know, it's not just black kids in there. And yeah. The thing is that, you know, I think a lot of times we label things as black history and this, that, and the other, but mm-hmm. really what it is it's American history.
Yeah.
We are Americans. This is a part of our history, but we can grow from it, and we've mm-hmm. grown from it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. 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 Anything else you want to say about that? Real quickly, if anyone was interested, like, is this still something you do? Is this still something people could get involved in if they hear this? And
yeah, no, so I right now, especially after COVID, there's a little bit of a hiatus that is done, and I'm trying to pursue getting the film to be used in these mentoring programs. So I've held back, but for 15 years, basically the second and fourth Saturday.
Yeah.
In 2011, I started my nonprofit. You know, I started as a nonprofit.
And what's it called?
Tell us. Team Freedom Outreach.
Okay. Right? And that's the website as well, right? Team Freedom
Outreach. TeamFreedomOutreach.org. Yep. Yep. So that's my nonprofit. Okay. And so, you know, I started that, and up until when I got the short film finished, that's when I said, okay, I've got to really, really pursue this in a way where I can, because the thing about it is I love doing this, and I'm going to get back to it. But one of the things I want to do one day, I would love to get the short film made into a feature film.
Yeah.
And with the proceeds, I would love to be able to, go to, local, theology schools.
Yeah.
And get, people who are training to be clergy people, mm-hmm. Do some type of intern with them where they could go and do team freedom outreach with them for a certain, like, 6 months and things like that.
Yeah.
So that way they can get training of mm-hmm. being able to minister to people, as well as, you know, getting exercise and doing, it could become a win-win.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, freedom is an important thing. Your shirt says True Freedom. I've also got my True Freedom shirt here as well. Tell me about, like, but I want to know, what do you, when you think about freedom, what do you think about? And how might that differ than maybe culturally how we think about freedom?
You know, the question I think that I had on my mind was, what is freedom to you? What is true freedom to you? Mm-hmm. Right. And what is true freedom to you? In that, true freedom for me is being with my family, right? But to someone else, it may be some different things. And sometimes the very things that we are trying to, you know, be successful in our career and things like that, we're not really taking the time to take an inventory of what it truly means to be free, what it truly means to have a connection with somebody that you love and that you can allow yourself to be loved by. So that's what true freedom, I think, you know, the representation of that.
Yeah. Tell us about your passion for movies and stories and how that came about and how that was cultivated.
You know, it's amazing. Like, back in 2011, when I started the nonprofit, I went to a friend of mine. His name is Brandon Jolly. I said, Brandon, he was working for Tyler Perry Studios at the time. And I said, Brandon, hey, I just want you to just simply record me asking men to come out and volunteer. You know, I want to go to local churches and get Christian men to come out and volunteer with us. And so I just want you to record that. He said, Isaac, that's not going to work. He said, you need to tell a story. And I said, what? He said, you need to tell a story. And so I wrote a script and I hired my little nephew, and we went in and we did this little skit based on one of the first conversations I had with the kid that I visited one-on-one in the detention center.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, when I did that video, I sent it to the Philadelphia Eagles, and Michael Vick's people reached out to me, and he ended up doing a public service announcement at the end of this thing. He had come back from, he had been locked up for dogfighting from like 2007 to 2009 or something like that. And he came back, and that year, he won comeback player of the year. He's a NFL quarterback, for those who don't know. And he was able to, he had a comeback year, and coming off that comeback year, you know, I just said, when his people contacted me, I tell people when I came to after fainting and came to crawl back to the phone, I said, hey, you know, he could do a PSA, just encouraging people to come out and volunteer with us. And he did that. So
yeah,
that showed me the power of volunteering. Showed me the power of that showed me the power of film.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And when
it's
that,
go ahead.
When that happened, I was kind of like, what? What? And I remember telling him, he and I went to visit Congressman John Lewis in Washington, D.C. And I said, man, I said, you doing this with me, man, has helped me realize that I said, you know, I've had an idea. He was the first person me and him were on the elevator together. You know what I'm saying? I said, man, I'm telling you this, but I said, I think I'm going to try to write a feature film. I said, inspired by what you did for me, you know what I mean? And I think I'm going to really try that now. And I can remember saying that out loud, you know, thinking to myself, well, you know, I said, man, you just inspired me that much. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
That was great.
So what was it about him that inspired you?
Well, you know what? I felt like he had this amazing God-given talent to play football, but just the culture that he was in, the people he was around, you know what I mean? He just fell into some bad things. And I think it could happen to any of us.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's also funny is, you mentioned Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy mentored him while he was in prison, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I really liked that Tony Dungy reached out to him, and did that. So, you know, it was really, really cool that he would, you know, do this with me. You know what I mean? Like it was an amazing thing. So once I did that, I think 2014, I sat my wife down and I said, hey, babe, I said, look, I know
you need to sit down for this.
You need to sit down for this. I know I've never made a script. I've never written a script before in my life, a feature film script, but I'm feeling like I got this story in me that I want to tell. And I said, look, you know, I'm working my day job. I said, hey, Tuesdays and Thursday nights, if you would just allow me to go to the library like a second job and figure this thing out. And I think it took me about 9 months. And I finished my first draft of True Freedom as a feature film.
So tell us about that experience and what you learned from that project.
Oh,
just writing the script.
Just writing the script. Just every day, man, just going and sitting and having all these characters in my mind and figuring out how to tell this story, you know, outline this story, and then, you know, just studying the different ways that you can tell a story and trying to come up with the best possible way to do it in a structural way where the beginning, middle, and end, where you at the end of the film, you can appreciate it and you come out feeling like, wow, I did, you know, this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And then when you finished this draft, was it any good or did you have to get help like making it better, or was it a masterpiece from the get go?
Oh my gosh. I'm 17 drafts in and 10 years. So no, it's always a work in progress, but, another great boost that I got was, once I finished it, what I realized was I didn't realize how hard it is to get people to read your stuff. I mean, friends and families, because people are busy, you know?
Yeah.
They're busy and everything. So, but it was a great experience to sit down and to kind of think through these characters and think through how to each scene by scene to do that. So yeah. it really, you know, test a lot of creative muscles on me.
Okay. All right. So you have this now, you have volunteer somewhere. It falls in somewhere. Where does it fall in? Is that before or after the script?
So after I did the script, okay. I was inspired by this song. Okay. I heard a song one day and I kept hearing the song and I said, you know what? I would love to, this kind of a music video played out in my mind.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, I'm probably not going to do that. And so, in 2017, Mr. and Mrs. Obama, they were completing their last year of, being in office. And so they came to this call. They said, hey, send us your ideas. We don't want to just build a presidential library. Send us your ideas. We're out of office now and we're part of the community. How could we help the community? Come up with any ideas that you guys have and send them to us. And so my idea was that I felt like a lot of people don't understand the power of volunteering and donating their time.
Yeah.
And so my idea was that Mr. and Mrs. Obama and Mr. and Mrs. Bush come together and do a public service announcement, encouraging people to volunteer somewhere in their local community. And I wanted to tell a story about a kid who gets locked up for vandalizing a bakery, but is positively impacted by a volunteer that comes into the detention center, a group of men who play, and one that visits him one-on-one, he gets a breakthrough. And so, just to kind of show the power of volunteering.
Yeah.
And so that's where I asked you to come on. And
and the star power I bring is just extraordinary.
But it was wonderful. We did a shoot over 40 volunteers.
Yeah.
The Lilburn Police Department, the DeKalb County Fire Department, all chipped in, all of these people.
Yeah.
And so that's how Volunteer Somewhere came about. But what happened with Volunteer Somewhere gave me the confidence to try to do True Freedom as a short film.
So this small project kind of was a stepping stone to the bigger project.
Yeah, because what happened was, I never will forget. So I went to work and on my lunch break, I asked two ladies, I said, hey, I've been volunteering at youth detention centers for years. Mr. and Mrs. Obama asked, you know, the public sending ideas. This is an idea I'm going to send them. Will you just take a look at it and tell me what you think? They both wept in front of me after they saw it. I was shocked. Yeah. I was like, maybe they were having a bad day. So the very next day, I remember I went to a cafe and I would always see this black woman and white woman. They would all be sitting together and I had never talked to them before. And I said, hey, you guys are, you know, I said, hey, I just finished. I explained to them what I was doing. I said, could you guys take a look at this video and tell me what you think? They both wept at the end of and I was kind of saying to myself, man, you know, well, if they did this off a 5-minute music video that I did, right? Like, maybe I could do a short film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like maybe I could truly do a short film. And that's how, I mean, that's what led me to going to try and do the short. Because I had to sit down and say to myself, okay, Isaac, why did you want to tell this story?
Yeah.
And because
and what did Isaac say when you asked him that?
and what I started saying is I'm seeing young people, who've been abandoned, and I want to try to, tell this story in such a way where they might get it and they might become better men and women at the end of the film. It inspires them to become better men and women despite being abandoned, especially by their fathers.
Yeah. It's actually funny. You talking about the, swirl framework and the abandonment. I had someone I worked with last year, a client, and, he described his, experience growing up, and it was like almost verbatim that scene in we'll talk about this, the scene you filmed first before you did the full thing. Mm-hmm. That scene where the kid's waiting, you know, he's hoping for his father to show up and he doesn't, but the scene, I actually sent it to him after he told me a little bit about his story, because I was like, the scene you described is just like this other kid. And I guess it's just a human thing, you know, it's evergreen. It transcends, when we have that sense, we all have that same longing and that hole in us. Right.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I started, after Volunteer Somewhere, I made the decision. I said, I'm going to do this as a short. Okay. So I wrote a short script.
And when you thought short, it ended up being 30 minutes. Is that what you had planned, or did you plan it being even shorter than that?
I just wanted to be like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. And, so I wrote the script and I got with the guys that I volunteer with, and they said, Isaac, you got to tell a beginning, middle, and end. You can't leave it just, you got to really do a beginning, middle, and end where, so, you know, because here was my thinking about it. I was like, I don't know if True Freedom will ever be a feature film, but what I could do is I could do it as a short, and I could donate it to mentoring programs where mentors could sit down with mentees and talk to them about abandonment so they might begin to heal. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with my guys. They were like, Isaac, you got to tell. So, you know, when I told the beginning, middle, and end, and they kind of helped me come up with, you know, he needs to do this, that, you know, and I wrote that. It was amazing to me because we usually work with boys, right? So I did like 3 table reads, and the table read is when you have a script, you go in, you give, say it's 10 kids sitting around. Each kid is a character. And we read through the script, you know, and then, you know, you ask them, you know, what they think about it and those types of things. Well, little boys, they, you know, teenagers, they're not, especially boys, they're like very surface level, you know, they wouldn't really say much about it. You know, they'd give me some feedback, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I had a friend who was mentoring the girls. And I asked her to go in and do a table read with her and the little girls. And I promise you, when we did that table read, those little girls were like, why did this happen? And why didn't she say this? And why, you know? And it's like, it was so cool of me, along with my writing partner, Miss Nas Pankey. I was able to write that thing a whole lot better after getting their input, because little girls get abandoned too.
Yeah.
And they feel some kind of way about it too. And so, that scene you were talking about, like, that helped me get through that scene as well.
Mm. So where did this idea to just start with this scene? What was the catalyst for that? I mean, you have this short script, you made it better. And then I assume from that, then you went to this first scene. Am I missing a piece?
So here's what I did. So it's a great question. So I didn't have enough money to do the whole short.
Yeah. Right.
So,
and how much money did you think you needed to, when you first were starting?
Well, I got with a friend of mine who is who's a great professional who had done volunteer somewhere with me.
Yeah.
And I
did
said,
you raise
hey,
any money for that, or was that all donation?
That was all donation. That was just you know, me donating to it.
And everyone just volunteering.
And everybody volunteering, right? Because I you know, and so I said, okay, listen, you know, I want to pay people because I was blown away by people volunteering their time to do that, right? I said,
yeah.
Hey, I want to at least pay people for their time. And I came to him and said, hey, how much would it be if we did it right? And that amount was $30,000.
Yeah.
Now, I never raised that kind of money whatsoever before, right? So I was like, what? So, but I said, hey, you know, at least he's told me now, right, what the amount is. So I raised some money to do just the first scene, that first scene that you did.
How much was that for that first part?
It was like $1,000.
Okay.
It's like $1,000.
Yeah.
And we did it. And it was just a really, really quick little scene.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do was capture the essence of it, of what I'm trying to do. And why I came up with doing that scene, what was happening was, so I'd had the short film script. Like I would go to the library of like colleges and pass out the script and say, hey, you know, I'm here at the library till this time. You know, this is just the short. Can you read this and tell me what you think about this?
Was this full script or just like a section?
This was just a short. It's just a short. It was the whole short.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
It was the whole short. And I would say, hey, could you just read this? And the amazing part that was coming back to me was people were like, man, the scene on the very first scene, I remember waiting for my dad and him not showing up.
Oh, wow.
And that's what started to resonate with me. You know what I mean? Like, wow. You know what I mean? Like that's, so I said, I at least need to do that as the beginning scene. I need to at least film that so people can kind of relate to what I'm trying to do, so that maybe I could raise the rest of the money to do it.
Okay. Yeah. So you have this scene, from this scene to, was it just from, it was using that scene to raise the 30,000, which ended up being what, 50,000?
Yeah. Yeah. So what I did was so when I used that, when I got that scene done, what I would do, I said, okay, Isaac, it's now or never. I've got to just sit down and try to raise the money. It took me 3 years. took me 3 years. I remember he gave me the budget back in 2018. And in November 2021 is when we start shooting.
Okay.
So I it took me that long to raise the money. But what was happening is when I would go to try to raise the money, when I do my presentation, I would show them that first scene. And they'd be like, wow. So one of the things I did was, I don't know. So Ambassador Andrew Young is a former mayor of Atlanta.
Okay.
And he's a gentleman who helped get the Olympics here in 1996. Mm. And he's a former ambassador to Mr. Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
He's a UN ambassador. And he's 91 now.
Oh, wow.
So I went to him and asked him if he would do a voiceover to play the role of the mentor who's talking to the main character.
Yeah.
On the phone. And he agreed to do it. But that's how I did it. I was able to sit down and show him what I was trying to do. So I showed him that first clip and the five phases of abandonment, you know, where I explained that. And he did it, you know. And so, and then, you know, more momentum comes from that. Hey, Ambassador Young has donated his voiceover. You know, I've got momentum. And then another company, H.J. Russell and Company, they were the first company to say, hey, we'll donate to it. And then another company, and then I had about 7,000 raised. And then Aetna CVS Health, the pharmacy company.
Yeah.
They, when they came in, and they saw it, I said, guys, I want to donate the film to mentoring programs. It's not about, you know, I've been seeing a lot of pain over the years, and with a video, you know, I explained to them this. There's, you know, at-risk youth, there's three ways that you, that mentoring programs help, right? There's preventative mentoring programs that, like, you know, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, 100 Black Men is trying to, you know, prevent them from getting in trouble.
Yeah.
There's organizations like mine, Team Freedom Outreach, that's going into the youth detention center and meeting kids in the darkest moments of where they are, right? So that's while they're there. And then there's programs that that try to prevent recidivism, right?
Okay.
You know, like for them going back and get back in trouble type thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, a film can help, can reach all three of those areas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And do you see that as like, because it gives them hope or what, how do you?
Well, I see it two ways. So I remember sitting with at CVS Health. They had a short film that they had done with first responders. It was and they talked about how with mental health, let's see, if you were a first responder and you saw somebody literally get hit by a train, your brain can't unsee that.
Yeah.
Right. So you could say, hey, that just happened at work. I'm just gonna deal with that because that just happened at work. But your brain, even though you try to compartmentalize it, it could be 2 or 3 weeks later, you could see a green car parked beside your house as you're coming home, and it bring those memories back.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, hey, the one thing with counseling that you can do is if you go to a professional counselor, they can help you to help your brain kind of cope with that.
Yeah.
And being able to talk with someone about those types of traumas helps with that, right?
Yeah.
But the one thing I did not see is I did not see any of the first responders actually go into a counselor and talk to one.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me the idea, you know what? I need to write a role because there's a stigma, especially in minority communities, to go get counseling, professional counseling, because they, you know, and I wanted to help stop that stigma.
Okay. Yeah.
So I reached out to Mr. Warwick Dunn. Warwick Dunn is a former NFL player who lost his mother when he was 18 years old. She was a police officer by day. He was the oldest of six. He was the oldest, and he was about to enter his senior year about to graduate. And his mother was killed. She was shot in the line of duty. She was working two jobs. She was a police officer by day and working security at night. And Warwick went on to go to Florida State University. He became the first running back to run for 1,000 yards three consecutive years, and he made it to the NFL.
Yeah.
But he talked about, I saw this clip where he talked about that it wasn't until he came to the Atlanta Falcons, he was 6 years in to his career. When he came to the Atlanta Falcons, he started going to counseling. And it helped.
Yeah.
And he talked about how he's been retired since 2009, but he's an advocate for counseling.
Yeah.
So I reached out to his camp and said, hey, you know, I've written a role where the main character comes in to see a counselor. And I want to help him in his quest to, you know, get rid of that stigma.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, he did it.
Yeah. So he was the one in it.
Yeah. So he was the one in it. Yeah. So he's the one in it. And so
I assume, is that what there was at their offices as well?
His
counseling office.
No. Okay. We actually filmed that at Victory. at Victory Church.
At my church.
we did a little makeshift office and filmed it there.
Now, was it called True Freedom when you first wrote it, or did that change come about?
It's not changed. It's True Freedom. It's True Freedom. And really, it's a freedom. Freeman is my main character.
Yeah.
And Truett is the slave that he meets in the year.
So give us the basic premise so people kind of understand what the story is about.
Okay, great, great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Two sentence log line of what the film is about. After his father abandons the family, a black kid grows up to build a time machine to save his mother. But when he ends up in the year 1860, the emotional insight begins when he brings a slave to the year 2014. And so Freeman, the main character, and Truett, the slave who he brings to the year 2000, it's kind of a play on that.
Yeah.
But I came up with True Freedom. As a result.
Okay, cool. Now tell us, I guess we'll split this into a couple different pieces here, but so you raised $50,000. Did you not film anything other than that first scene until you raised the full amount, or were you raising as you were shooting?
Yeah. No, I raised the full amount.
Tell us what you learned about that. Like, what if someone else is like, I want to do this. What tips would you give them? What advice would you give them on how to effectively fundraise for a short film?
It's the hardest thing. One of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. But I think you have to have a conviction and a passion that you and a true belief that this film it needs to be put into the world. You know what I mean? Like this, you know, and I want to make a difference. You know what I mean? I want to make a difference. So I you know, I think you've got to get used to the no's. You have to. And you can't let that get you down. You know, you got to let the one no fuel you for the next no to fuel you for the next no. So that when you get the yes, you're thrilled. I mean, you're like, it's a miracle. Right. But you really have to have that dogged persistence. Yesterday it's like a thrill of my life. There's a character in my feature film.
Yeah.
That I've always wanted to, I wanted to cast this guy to be in the film. And yesterday I got a chance to talk to him. He's been doing film and TV now, for 23 years.
Yeah.
And I want him to play the young Freeman's younger brother in the feature. And just talking to him, I was saying to him, man, I was like, this is like a dream come true. I said, man, every day that I think about True Freedom, I think about you as the character and what you do. So it's surreal for me to be sitting here talking to you. and he was thrilled. And he's agreed to come on to play that role.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is great to me. You know what I mean? But I was like, you know, I just, you know, when you have that belief, and part of the reason I brought that up is he said, man, my agent said, Isaac, he said, man, hey, this guy, he contacted you first in 2015. and he's finished a short film version of this. And he said, when I saw the short film, he said, man, I was blown away. He said, let me talk to this guy.
Yeah.
So
it opened up a door. Yeah.
So it opened up a door. So that type of persistence, the point I'm trying to make is that type of persistence can go a long way. I had no idea. I mean, that's what they told him. Like, you know, this guy contacted us back in 2015 when he was thinking about doing this. And he's got a short film version. And yeah, once they showed it to him, he said, it was really good. He said, I'm really impressed.
So having a strong conviction, being persistent, perseverance through the nose. Any other principles that you would convey in terms of the fundraising piece?
I would say, you know, have a clear vision too. You know, be able to communicate your vision, because when you get in there and you're able to communicate the vision, you know, that can help you kind of communicate what needs to be done. I got a storyboard. I went to Fiverr.
Okay.
And had them create a storyboard. So it's like
for the whole 30 minutes
for the whole. For the whole thing. And this was just scenes. Okay.
Yeah.
It was like maybe, I think 15 slides or something like that.
Okay. So it wasn't everything. It was just kind of highlights.
It was kind of highlights. Right.
Okay.
But I remember, you know, when I would go in and pitch, you know, doing it, when I would show those slides, the first thing they'd say is, "Wow, how'd you get those slides?" You know, because, you know, I think people want to know that you're giving it your all, because if they're going to invest, they want to know that you're fully invested. Yeah. You're fully vested into it. You know,
they want you to demonstrate. They want to see clues to demonstrate that your conviction, right?
Right.
Hey, I'm all in. I'm going down with the ship if it doesn't get across the sea.
Right. And I think when they start seeing, hey, wow, this guy got a video, you know, showing his first scene and what he's trying to accomplish with it. He's got, you know, a storyboard that shows everything. You know, it starts to give them confidence that you can do it. And then the other thing was, and I didn't realize this. What really sold it was sometimes it was at the end of it, I would show them Volunteer Somewhere.
Mm.
The 5-minute video, you know, music video. And they'd say, man, that was great. You know, and it gave them confidence that I could do a good job with the short.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're building, you know, I don't know how intentional you were, but it's like you were building pieces of the puzzle and they came together at the right time for you to get to the next step, right?
Exactly. Because you know, with some success, then it builds on other success and other success. And so people, you get a track record, you know, I mean, if Quentin Tarantino came into your office and said he wanted to do a movie, you may not fund it, but you're going to be all ears.
Yeah.
Because he's got a great track record of being a great storyteller.
Yeah. So let's shift to the production side of it. What did you learn about producing and directing, and, you know, did the writing have to be tweaked while you were shooting stuff? Tell us the lessons you learned on the production side of things.
Oh my goodness, man. The production side. So I had never directed before.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had to learn about blocking and blocking scenes. And making sure what camera angle is it going to be at, where, you know, each scene, you know, who's going to stand where, what.
Yeah.
But
how old were you when you were doing this?
Oh my goodness. I was at the time, this is only 2021 is when we got the money to do it.
Okay.
So that 48? Was 2 years ago. Yeah. 48. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I want to pause one moment here, because I think a lot of people think they hit their 30s, they hit their 40s, they hit their 50s, and they're done. They can't do something like you're doing, but you're 48 and you're directing your first movie. So do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? I think sometimes part of it is in your own head, you're saying, I can't do this. You know, I remember going to the gentleman who had helped me do Volunteer Somewhere. And I said, hey, can you direct this? He said, I feel like you should direct it. And I was like, well, I've never directed before. He's like, well, that's the first time for everything. He said, I'll be right there with you. Right. Making sure you don't, you know, you're not going to be completely, totally on your own. And I think you have the vision. And if you have the vision, then it'll come out the way that you envisioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm so glad he was humble enough to tell me that. And you know, it gave me the courage to do it.
Yeah.
And so in the production aspect, you know, you've got to do all this blocking and, you know, there's a lot more that you know, each script on the script, you got to label it, you know, 1, 2, 3 scene, you know, you've got to get people ready for the, you got to find out what actors need to be there. And this was around COVID. So everybody had to be tested.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was maddening, bud. It was maddening, but it truly opened my eyes to how you can really tell a story, and you're not just doing it alone. You know, the set design people, you know, the wardrobe people, you have a vision, but I didn't know what everybody had on, what everybody was wearing. I didn't know what the production, you know, what the set looked like, that type of thing. And they would come alongside you and say, hey, I've got an idea for this. How do you think this could work? And this, and it comes together in that way. It's truly a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
A movie is.
Now, if you were mentoring someone that was, or if you rewind to past Isaac and you're giving him advice before he starts doing this on how you raise the money, here's how you could go about this production piece more effectively, you know, less waste, you know, get a better vision, better outcome. What would be some of the things you would tell yourself?
I think I would tell myself that, be patient and just, you know, trust the process, because, you know, it's such a collaborative thing. Like we had to, we did a rehearsal or two, we did like two rehearsals, you know, via Zoom.
Yeah.
and, you know, and I cast my vision and when I cast my vision and help people understand that, you know, I'm trying to truly do this so that a kid can open up about feelings of abandonment at the end of this and may want to possibly reconcile with a loved one that may have abandoned them, or you know, or they would start thinking, you know, get them to thinking about their life, right? And how can we tell this story in such a way where they could truly get it and truly see themselves reflected in the story or some things about the story. So I would tell people to really have the patience to because it's a there's a lot of moving parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of moving parts. And
but
now I feel much more validated having gone through that process.
Yeah. So I want to talk about kind of the future of the project, but before I do that, let's talk about how you're using the 30-minute film now and what you're trying to do through Teen Freedom Outreach. So talk to us a little bit about more of that and how this is being used or is going to be used in mentoring. Talk to us about that and who might be, whoever might be hearing this or watching it, that they might be a good connection to tap into this resource.
Excellent. Hey, and this is, I'm so glad you asked this. For all mentoring programs, no matter what your mentoring programs are, what I would love for you to do is go to truefreedomfilm.com, go to screening and sign up for screener. You can put your name and your email address in and what mentoring program you're working with. It will automatically send you the screener where you could watch it. One of the first and largest organizations that their board approved it to be seen is the 100 Black Men organization. They've got like 10,000 members and volunteers that they work through it throughout the country.
So they definitely went above the 100. Got above 100.
They definitely did. So their board approved it. So, but I, you know, they work on a chapter basis. So I kind of need to go to each chapter and introduce it and show it and things like that. But that's, you know, that's my hope is that it could be used so that it could, and CVS Health Aetna, along with Mental Health America, they kind of gave me a facilitator's guide where a facilitator could actually take a look, you know, someone that wants to use it in their program, they can use this guide to start questions and things like that. So that's how I definitely want it to be used.
What about churches?
And churches could use it as well. They could use it as well. Any nonprofits that are wanting to use it, you know, to do some type of social impact. But part of the goal is to stop the stigma of mental health counseling, professional counseling, if you need it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I am so proud of the film. In fact, so when we finished the film, we got nominated for this award called the HAP Award, Hollywood African Prestigious Award.
Okay.
It's out in LA. Okay. So I was kind of like, you know, wow, something I'm a mentoring thing, I'm, a, you know, a short film I'm doing for mentoring. But we got nominated. And so it's a black tie event. Me and my wife flew out to LA.
Yeah.
We had, we were staying with my wife's relative. In going to the event, they said, okay, the nominees for best short film, I didn't know what they were, what the other nominees were. They said True Freedom, my film. They named four other films, and one of those films was Netflix's Oscar-winning short film, Two Distant Strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I heard that, I was thinking to myself, oh, okay, it's great that we got nominated. We got to dress up, you know, type of thing, right? And when they said the winner is True Freedom, it's like I was a deer in the headlights. Are you serious? When I got up to the podium, it's almost like I'm like, ah!
I didn't have a speech prepared. There's no way I could win.
I was in shock. I was in real shock. But it wasn't until I got home, to my wife's relatives, and I said, "Hey guys, I said I need you guys to watch Netflix's Oscar-winning short film, Two Distant Strangers. I need you to watch that first before you watch my film, right?" So she's a widower. She's in her 60s. And her son, who's in his 30s, who's just moved back to L.A., they both watched Two Distant Strangers. And they both were like, "Listen, that's one of the best short films I've seen." I said, "Yeah." I said, I know. And they said, "Man, I don't know how you won." And I said, "Yeah." I said, so let me show you mine." When I showed them my film, at the end, they both were in tears.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them were in tears. And I was really shocked. But what made me more shocked was that their father did not want to die, right? But you can feel abandoned because of his death.
Yeah.
Right. And I realized that it's not about my film. It's about the way my film makes you feel.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, dive into that a little more.
So once I saw that, it was like it quickened in me that this is a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing was Aetna CVS Health came to me and said, "Hey, Isaac, we want to show our Black employee resource group the film for Juneteenth."
Okay.
And I was like, "Okay." I said, "Okay." So we want to do it as a virtual screening.
Yeah.
Okay. So we go in there to do it as a virtual screening. Okay. And as we're doing it as a virtual screening, they did a survey, 5 stars being the highest. CVS Health Aetna came back to me afterwards and they said, "Isaac," they put up a chart. They said, "Isaac," they said, "out of 5 stars, they said, the average ranking on this thing was a 4.78. They said, "Isaac, that's the 95th percentile." And the comments were like, "Man, this thing was so beautiful. It was beautifully told. It made me think about, you know, things that's happened in my life," type thing. And so I'm really, really fired up about trying to make this a feature film because I want it to be an event film that people can go to and watch at the theater.
Yeah. So before we talk about that, one last question. You had this premiere. So was the premiere that I attended, that's where I got this shirt here.
Yep.
what was that like? I mean, obviously you had the big event where you won the award and school, but you know, the private event, or the screening was more of a private thing. These are the people that were in the movie. How did that make you feel? What was that like?
Well, you know what? And I'm so glad you mentioned it. So when we did the screening, this is before the awards and all that, right? We did it at a theater. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, about 100 or so people there, you know, cast and crew, friends and family. So, you know, you hear when I showed the film, when the people came out, they were like, "Man, this thing needs to be making a feature film." But I'm like, okay, they know that I, you know, eventually made it as a feature, wanted to make a feature film. You know, your friends and family are always going to be in your corner.
Yeah.
I kind of did not. I just thinking, hey, these are my friends. Of course they're going to say it's good.
Yeah.
Right. They're my friends, right? They want the best for me. They'll say it's good. Right. And so I kind of had an idea that it was good, but I still somewhat that self-doubt of, okay, they're my friends. I mean, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when all that other stuff happened, I started realizing maybe I really do have something.
Yeah. You hit it's like the way you describe it just makes me think you've hit this emotional nerve, and particularly as it relates to your story, our society's history, how far we've come, where we're going. And, you know, in many ways, it feels like we're at this identity-based moment in our society's story. Like, who do we want to be? What's the story we want to tell? What's the type of country we want to be, type of people and citizens we want to be? And we're wrestling with this, and we're kind of struggling with it. And I think your film has an interesting way of sort of capturing that tension, and also maybe helping us to see the bigger picture, right?
Yes. And I think that aspect of the thing is sometimes we can get caught up into a lot of things that we feel like matter that really don't matter as much.
Yeah.
As the core thing, you know?
Yeah. And figuring out what is that core thing?
What is that core
thing? And sorting through it and going, actually, this thing is more important than that thing.
Yeah.
I think that's really critical.
Yeah.
So in a couple of years, sometime in the future, I'm going to be standing on this movie set for this feature film called True Freedom, right?
Okay.
What happened to get me into that moment? Tell me what needs to happen for that to happen.
Well, I need to raise the money to do it. Or get a large streamer or someone to want to do it and promote it and do it.
Yeah.
But right now it's about the funding, and it's about getting the, I spoke with a director that wants to come on to be a director, to direct a film. They've done several projects that have been profitable. So now it's really about, you know, getting the right pieces in place so that we would film it all here in Georgia. It would be a beautiful, a beautiful thing to show how far we've come as the city of Atlanta, you know, just how far we've come as a nation.
Yeah.
You know, so.
What kind of money are you talking about? How much are you trying to raise for this full feature? How long is the feature?
Well, are you asking me? Now here's the thing. I got with a professional, and I gave him my feature script, and I said, listen, this is not about how much I can raise. This is not about how much, line by line, you know, prop by prop, how much would it cost to film this thing, to do it right? Not to just do it, to do it right. Because you can come up with all type of budget to do it.
Yeah, you know, one of the good starting point that was anchored in reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when he said $7 million, you know, when I came to, you know, he came back with an 80-page budget, you know, of $7 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we may have to do it for less than that. I'm not saying, but, you know,
but that's the goal.
That was the goal.
And how long is that?
How long is the
feature?
The length of feature is
estimated.
2 hours long. Yeah,
okay, estimated. So two-hour movie, $7 million.
$7 million. And the thing about it is, you know, they're only in slavery about 20 minutes of the 2-hour movie. But, I want to explore fatherlessness, if you will, in the film, and so. I just wanted to, you know, the film itself is a beautiful film that plays in my mind every day.
Yeah.
But how can we get this big stack of paper to actually become a feature film?
Yeah.
And that's where I am right now, trying to figure that out.
And so so you raised $50,000. Now that seems like pennies compared to this. So, if someone hears this, sees it, is interested, and getting involved, whether it's connecting you with someone, or maybe they are, maybe they're an investor that has funds to help. What would be the best way for them to move forward with that exploration?
Oh yeah. And they could go to, truefreedomfilm.com and sign up for the screener, and or the contact information on there, and I can, they can send it to me, and we can have that conversation, because I'm definitely interested in having someone, you know, help me come alongside with me, because this is not, you know, I'm just a regular guy, right? I'm just a regular guy. I just, you know, I came up with this idea to do it, you know, being, you know, trying to do my nonprofit. And I just think this could be a wonderful way that we could tell a great story and get people to go get mental health counseling if they need it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking forward to with this company trying to go out and get others to join up with us so that we can come up with a really good package to raise the $7 million.
Yeah. And is this the type, do you have any idea on how that type of money is raised in terms of, like, is it a bunch of individuals kind of, you get a bunch of them to contribute, or are you looking for like a production company or a studio that
I would love a production company or studio, or high net worth individual, right?
Yeah.
High net worth individuals that could do it, because I definitely want to, you know, when you talk about a profitable movie, you're talking about a for-profit venture.
Yeah.
And I definitely have a great vision to not only do the film, but get the film to be possibly profitable. Mm-hmm. But 96% of feature films do not make their money back.
Yeah.
So about,
but you know, most of them are not this $7 million budget. The movies that are lower budgets tend to have a lot more profitability than the ones
even those, it's very, very difficult to make your money back. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's a sincere reality of, what we're doing. It's a very sincere reality of what we're doing. However, you know, if a studio or a streamer wanted to do it, you know, it's not as much of a risk for them.
Got it.
Yeah.
Versus if someone's wanting to invest and really get a certain type of profit, they're probably not the best fit, because you want someone that's willing, that's really got the conviction for getting the message out more than the profit.
Correct.
Right?
So it's really more about the message. It's about helping with this message, because, you know, one of the striking things, if you see my trailer, the main character is at, he's at a counseling office.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see that every day.
Yeah. Right?
And so, you know, it's kind of a striking thing.
We need the Counseling Association of America to go ahead and fund this project right now.
put the plugs in there. But yeah, because I think once you start getting that, you know, you want it to be a mainstream conversation, and there not be a stigma around it.
Yeah.
And doing something like this helps to because, you know, there's a lot of people who've been through a lot of trauma, everyday trauma. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing wrong with going and seeking and getting professional health counseling for it.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a lot of things. What else do you want to share that you didn't get a chance to share so far?
You know, hey, just the fact that I guess the main thing I really want to say is this: this has been a labor of love. You know, sometimes you have to step out on faith, right?
Yeah.
Dr. King said this. He said, faith is taking the first step when you don't see the whole stairwell.
Yeah.
you know, I stepped out on faith and wrote a script.
Yeah.
And from there, 10 years later, I'm still plugging along, but now I have an award-winning short film. You know, this is how I look at it. 40,000 feature films get copywritten every year. Okay. Of those 40,000, 8,000 short films get made every year and are accepted into film festivals. Okay.
Yeah.
But of those numbers, how many of them have an award-winning short film that beat an Oscar winner, right?
Yeah.
Of those, how many of those have been seen by a Fortune 50 company,
mm-hmm.
right? And given a ranking in the 95 percentile. So I realized that, you know, there are steps to this, and I've got to be able to show someone
yeah.
that this can be something that they could truly have and it could truly be a win-win for.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got the cards stacked in your favor.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for sharing about your story and the things you learned. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Share Life podcast. For additional stories and systems to live better and work smarter, visit jasonscottmontoya.com. That's jasonscottmontoya.com. We look forward to having you listen in on the next episode of Share Life, Systems and Stories to Live Better and Work Smarter.
Are you a freelancer struggling to get clients and sustain an income? Check out Jason Montoya's book, Path of the Freelancer, where he provides the blueprint for mastering freelancing and sustaining a business of one. Start generating a six-figure freelancing income. Get Path of the Freelancer, an actionable guide to flourishing in freelancing on Amazon today. Are you a small business owner? Have you hit a glass ceiling where year over year, you cannot rise above a certain revenue level? Check out Jason Scott Montoya's book, The Jump, to discover how to level up your leadership and pivot your entrepreneurial passion to the highest level. The Jump from Chaos to Clarity for your striving small business is available on Amazon.